Et maintenant, je donne la parole à Rory Fitzgerald, qui est directeur du consortium European Social Survey et également Research Fellow à l'Université de Londres. Et c'est avec grand plaisir que nous retrouvons, puisque les liens dans le consortium sont suffisamment importants pour que Rory vienne nous visiter, comme d'autres collègues en d'autres pays, à Paris assez régulièrement. Donc Rory, si tu veux bien. Prends la parole.
Okay, while we're working on getting the slides, I'll say some introductory words. It's a real pleasure to be here today and to be co-organising this event on health inequalities with our colleagues and friends here in France. There, in many ways, is probably no bigger inequality than one's lifespan, and bigger inequality than having poor health. So I think today's topic is one of the real grand societal challenges, which I'm delighted that the ESS has been able to address today, and I'm particularly grateful to Tahrir Akimo and his team, who will be hearing from Tahrir shortly, for the excellent scholarship that's gone into designing this module. Particular thanks, of course, also to Pascal and Amélie for the excellent work that's gone into producing this event. They take a lot of time. And to Jacques as well, his words and his leadership, really, in ESSFRI for the social sciences and humanities is really essential to making that case for research infrastructure. Very many times we hear from other domains the social sciences don't need research infrastructures, or even that we can't have them. Well, we're going to prove today that we certainly can, and I'm also delighted that we're having this event jointly with SHARE. Increasingly now, the social science projects are working together. Last week, we were with colleagues from SESTA, the data archive infrastructure, in Romania, working together there to try and bring them on board in the future. And today, it's great that we're working with SHARE. Okay, so a little bit of background. European Social Survey was established in 2001. It has five key aims, the first one of which we're really focused on today. That's monitoring stability and change in the social fabric of Europe. This is the first time we've really covered health in detail. There is a small number of health questions in every round. It's the first time we've managed to cover health. Hopefully, in the future, we can return to that. We also wanted to make sure that we set and use the highest standards of measurement. Cross-national surveys, cross-national measurement is particularly fraught and difficult. Not only are there differences of language and methodological differences, there's also difficulties with differences in funding and survey climate. And we wanted the ESS to be a beacon, really, for high-quality measurement. The third aim of the European Social Survey is to try and establish societal indicators based upon more subjective measurement. We have very strong measures in terms of GDP, for example, or hospital waiting lists published by countries, official statistics, but how do citizens actually feel about their societies, think about their world? And that was the third aim of the ESS, to try and establish some indicators for the longer term. Fourth aim, we wanted to train the next and current social scientists, particularly younger scholars, and we have a programme of online training and also some courses where researchers from Europe come across together and work on learning skills for the future. And finally, and most importantly, it's very important that the findings from surveys like the ESS and other social science infrastructures actually have utility. So yes, of course, we need to have the highest standards of measurement. We need to ensure that the analysis is academically rigorous. But what's most important, of course, is that those findings actually have an influence on our lives, enable us to improve the societies that we live in, and inform political and social debate. And today is very much part of that programme of work, to try and get that message beyond the journal article and into the hands of policy colleagues, for example, at the European Commission. And it's fantastic that the Commission is represented here today. So there's two parts of the ESS questionnaire. Core questionnaire, which stays the same more or less in every round of the survey, and this covers topics such as immigration, trust in politicians, subjective well-being, and self-rated health, amongst many other topics. And we can see the change in some of those measures over time. However, what's particularly appealing maybe about the core questionnaire that we'll be seeing today is its rich tapestry of background variables. So the way in which we measure education and occupation in particular is really quite extensive. And we'll be hearing, I think, later in the presentation, how that's in some ways what makes this module quite unique, this health module, is the fact that it's in this wider survey of sociological measurement. So we've done the aims, a little bit about the background of things we haven't maybe covered so far. Although the survey is now a European Research Infrastructure Consortium, so it's been adopted by governments and member countries, but it remains academically led, and particularly the topics which are included in the survey, it's a prize for academia. And it's something that academic independence of that content is very important. Data is available for free. Anyone can download it anywhere in the world. The ESS is a face-to-face survey conducted every 2 years. And we've already conducted over 350,000 interviews. And it's a survey of individuals. And it's conducted, the sample is drawn from probability methods. The seventh round is completed, and we're hearing about those results today, and the eighth round is now in the field. It was a real honour for my predecessor, Roger Jowell, and his team to win the 2005 Descartes Prize, the first and only time, as far as I'm aware, that the prize has been won by social science infrastructure. And 2013, a key year when the European Social Survey became a European Research Infrastructure Consortium, a signal that we should have long-term and stable funding. It's a signal. We're not quite there with that bit, but we're working on it, like many other infrastructures. It's the long-term funding and commitments which are the main challenge. There are just over 3,000 publications that have used the ESS so far. Around half of those are journal articles, and you can see on the right-hand side some of the key places which ESS data is now being published. And Social Indicators Research is the journal where things are most often included. And the number of users. This shows how actually social science infrastructures reach a far larger number of scientists and students and scholars, to be honest, than I think most natural science infrastructures would get close to. And we are thinking that this will be the year that we get our 100,000th data user, and we're planning a prize for whoever that person is. And the socioeconomic impact that we were talking about in the introduction, I'm not going to go through each of these, but here are some examples of how the ESS has had impact by being presented in parliaments, through coverage in the media. In fact, some of the results from today's presentation have already appeared in the media today, and hopefully that will continue. And we're conducting an impact case study. In fact, the evaluators for that are here to look how the ESS is being used in each of the ESS ERIC member countries. So I mentioned the core topics that stay the same in every round, and then there are these. There's this competition where teams of academics from across Europe come together from at least three different ESS countries and bid for a module. So we see round seven, health inequalities module, and also a module on immigration. And in fact, next month, there'll be an event in London where the head of the immigration team is running a British Academy seminar on the immigration results. And in round eight, we can see the emphasis on climate change and energy use and welfare state futures. Thirty-six countries have taken part in the survey in at least one round, and we currently have 17 members and four guests in the current round, and we're hoping for at least another two that will come on board by the end of the round. Again, time is a little short, so again, I'm not going to go through every bit of the questionnaire design process, but I just wanted to give you a flavour of how much work has gone into the module that's going to be presented today. And it was basically a two-year design process. Tahrir was very patient with us. Every single kind of question that a team wants to ask is critiqued and piloted, and there's cognitive interviewing and quantitative analysis. The whole process is documented. And we're talking about teams here who aren't just coming up with a set of questions, but they've got a measurement model that they want to test, and they want to test it in a way that's equivalent across countries. And that's a hard thing to do. First, for many scholars to actually be very clear about what they're intending to measure, particularly in a team environment, and then to devise questions which will answer that. Just wanted to give one example of something which is quite novel in this round. We wanted to measure alcohol consumption. This is increasingly seen as an important issue for health, particularly if, like me, you're sort of half Irish and half English. We'll probably be hearing later about how I should probably go and get my liver checked out. But we wanted to measure that, and many surveys have done this today in either a very complicated way. How many units of alcohol did you drink? Most people don't know what a unit is, to be honest. Or how many drinks did you have? But what's a drink? A drink could mean very many different things in terms of alcohol. So we decided what we actually really wanted to measure. What was the target of our measurement? It was grams of alcohol. And so we produced what we call a source questionnaire show card to try and give people examples of what they might have drunk the last time they had alcoholic drinks. And this, like most of the ESS questionnaires, originally designed in British English. And this was the show card that we produced for respondents in the UK. And then behind each drink is a number of grams of alcohol that would be the average that you would have in that type of drink. So rather than just saying to people, how many drinks did you have, we broke it down to get a more accurate estimate. And then each country produces its own show card, so you can see that the quality of alcohol is improving as we move from the UK to France. We have champagne. And then, well, we move to Norway, where Tahrir is from, and I think we've even got some alco pops there maybe at the end. Is that an alco pop? Okay. So this is like one approach to measurement, moving away from something very simplistic to try and improve the standards of measurement. And I think the alcohol approach that we have here is very interesting. Before I finish, just one last slide. I just wanted to reflect on some of the methodological notes that might impact on the results we're going to be hearing about today. Obviously, we have this rich tapestry of background variables that I mentioned before. We should remember that we're talking here about self-reported health conditions. So we haven't measured anything. We haven't taken anyone's blood or looked at their biomarkers. You know, we might hear from Cher later, but they do more of that. So it's self-reported. Mental health, very important, but we know it's difficult to measure cross-nationally to get equivalent translations. My colleagues who are here from University of Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona have looked at the equivalence of questions across countries, and depression is one really challenging concept to measure. We do have high-quality sampling, good translation procedures and field work. We have reasonable coverage of Europe, but the South, sadly, not as well represented as we might like in round 7 of the ESS. I think we should also remember that not so much for the top-line results, but when analysis is done later, looking at certain conditions, the sample sizes are quite small. So it might be necessary to group countries to look at that. The institutional population are not included in surveys like the ESS. So people in homes for the elderly, etc., would be excluded. So we would be underestimating health condition prevalence probably in the ESS a little. And there are specific challenges, of course, to asking about health. So the phrase general practitioner is used in many surveys, but that doesn't necessarily travel particularly well. So it's a strong survey. It has many strengths, but of course also weaknesses. And here is just one example. We try as far as possible to keep the inputs, the design of the survey, as close as possible. But there are many, many things in the data, different interviewer effects, response rate, challenges, issues to do with translations. It's a complex data set, so it will take many years of mining to probably uncover some of those difficulties. So I pass on to Tahrir now. I'd like to thank you for your time and for coming today. And yes, we're in for a treat, I think. Thank you. Yes. Cheers.